everybody. Welcome to the Large Neutron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is the easy breezy Jonathan Strickland.
I'm feeling a little anxious, if you know what I mean.
Oh, well then I guess you're not always easy breezy. Why are you a little anxious?
Oh, I'm merely referencing a classic comedy movie that sort of ties into one of the things we'll talk about today.
Ah, okay. It's me and my never getting the references I really ought to get.
Yeah, I'm surprised you did. Well, I didn't say it anywhere close to the way it's said in the film. So if I were to quote it more in line with the character, it'd be feeling a little anxious, if you know what I mean.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah, now I know. Now I know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, now it's all come crashing back. Yeah, so Ariel and I, we are recording this a night early, or earlier than when we typically do. We usually record on Fridays. We are recording on a Thursday. I say that because, as is always the case, I'm sure that some sort of major entertainment news story will drop between today and tomorrow that we would have covered had we recorded on a Friday. But as it turns out, both of us actually have conflicts tomorrow. So rather than go another week with a missing or lost episode, we're recording a little early.
Yes. So fun. But that doesn't mean we have a lack of things to talk about. In fact, we have a lot to talk about, but most of it is in our 30 seconds or less. We'll see if we stick to that. I think we might.
We won't. We already know we won't. Oh. But we put a lot in there because a lot of the elements for the 30 seconds or less on initial glance look like, oh, we can just quickly go over this and move on. But you know us. You know, if that music stops playing and we're still talking, just give us a little grace.
Challenge accepted, Jonathan.
Okay, well, let's see how we do.
I know there's at least one thing where I initially had like an add-in, and I may not now.
Well, we'll get started with 30 seconds or less, and I have the first one, so here we go. First up, The Hollywood Reporter has reported that Willem Dafoe has joined the cast of Beetlejuice 2. There's that reference. The scuttlebutt is that Dafoe is going to be playing some sort of ghost cop or cop ghost or, you know, a dead law enforcement guy. So based on that, I'm guessing he's trying to chase down the ghost with the most. Beetlejuice 2 is already in production, and so assuming no rewrites are needed, should progress despite the writer's strike.
We'll see. It depends on if they pick it. Ooh, I've already failed. Okay. Anyhow, next, Lego has released a new bat set. And by that I mean they've released the Batcave Shadow Box. So when it's closed up, you see bits of the Batcave with a big like Batman logo in front. And when you open it up, there's the entire Batcave in there that you can play with interactive knobs and a little Batmobile that has raising up little turrets and a little fiery back end. It's $400. It comes out June 8th. It's almost 4,000 pieces. And yes, it will probably end up living at my house.
That's crazy expensive. Okay, all right. We'll talk about that later. One of the miniseries currently on hold due to the aforementioned writer's strike is The Penguin, which is the spinoff series from the sparkly vampire version of The Batman. While The Penguin was already in production, picketers were actually able to convince other folks like Teamsters to not cross picket lines, and the studio has put the whole production on hold. No telling yet to what extent, if any, this delay will have on the release, which is supposed to be sometime in 2024.
Yeah, but if you're sad that The Penguin's not coming out, that's okay. You can drown your tears by streaming D&D on Paramount Plus. Yes, the actually very well-received D&D movie, Honor Among Thieves, or D&D Hat, recently dropped on Paramount Plus, free to subscribers. It's like 91% critically fresh on Rotten Tomatoes and 93% audience fresh on tomatoes. That's astounding for a D&D movie. If you don't have Paramount Plus, you've already used your free trial and you don't want to subscribe, you can also rent it on Google Play or YouTube for $20 or buy it on Amazon for like $25. I quite enjoyed it.
It's interesting. I used to have a D&D hat, and it was also 91% fresh.
Ew.
You got Game of Thrones in my Excalibur. Hey, you got Excalibur stuck in my Khal Drogo. Say. So there's this 10-episode quote-unquote revisionist take on King Arthur that's already wrapped production that will be coming to the channel MGM Plus, which used to be the channel Epics. And I am so out of the loop on cable TV, I had not heard of either of those. Anyway, it looks like it's going to be violent and gritty, and I'm guessing it's going to make some real choices with Arthurian legend. Not sure when it's going to be out, though. It's already wrapped, so this is not something that's going to be delayed. Just don't know when it's coming to screens.
Epics does have some stuff that I enjoy, but not enough that I'll subscribe to it. Like, there's a great series from that I watched the first, like, 7 episodes of and haven't watched anymore because I don't want to buy the system, the service right now. Twister... Are you old enough to remember the Twister movie from 1996? Probably most of our listeners are. But if you aren't familiar with it, it was a movie about people who went storm chasing for tornadoes. It was pretty good. There was a ride at Universal Florida about it for a while. I don't know if it's still there. But now, these many years later, we are getting a sequel to it. It's not a direct sequel. It's more of like a next installment in the franchise. But it's about a storm chaser who got really scared by a tornado by a close call and now works a desk job and gets pulled back in. It stars Daisy Edgar Jones. It also stars Anthony Ramos and a bunch of other up and coming cool people.
Yeah, I just want to point out the Twister ride closed in 2015, so Ariel's even more out of touch with Universal Studios than I am with cable television.
Yeah. Also, the sequel to Twister is called Twisters.
Yeah, not Twister-er.
No, not okay. Twister 2, more Twisted.
Yeah, which, I mean, so many lost opportunities. All right, I'm done.
Double
I'm done
helix all the way.
Darn it. Okay, well, I'm going to go to do my next one right now before we get completely off trail. So, we have mentioned in other episodes of Large Neutron Collider that the Goofy Comedy Twins, which cast Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito as the titular twins, was supposed to get a sequel called Triplets. But apparently, that is no longer the case, and according to Schwarzenegger, it's all because of Jason Reitman. Jason's father, Ivan Reitman, directed the Twins film, but sadly, Ivan Reitman passed away last year. Anyway, according to Arnold, Jason just didn't get Twins. So now the project is really most sincerely dead.
That's a shame because I met Danny DeVito's stunt double in Las Vegas. I'm sure none of you guys have heard this story from the many times I've talked about it on this show. And that was one of the things he said he was working on.
He was excited about. Yeah. You had mentioned it. And at one point, I think, so this was one of those things that got on the cutting room floor. I think you mentioned it and you weren't at the time comfortable saying what the production was. And then I guessed it, and then I had to go back and edit it out.
That's completely accurate, because at the time, I didn't know if it had been announced yet. Like, we hadn't really seen anything about it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, fun times. Arnold's kind of been going, sorry, this is one of those places we're going to take a slight detour. Arnold's kind of like, he went at Terminator 2 recently, saying like, well, the franchise isn't dead, but I'm done with it. He's on an actor's like honest opinion path, it feels like.
Yeah, we also call those hissy fits.
He's entitled to his opinion, and also like sure, I didn't absolutely care for the last couple Terminator movies, so it's fine.
No, I don't think most people did.
Yeah, so like I get it. I can't super fault him. Mm-hmm. Something else that I thought was gone and is not is Archer, but it will be soon. So it has now confirmed that season 14 will be its final season, and it is going to air August 30th on FXX at 10 p.m. And stream the next day on Hulu. That's all I have to say about it. Do you like how I said it real slow so it would fit the 30 seconds?
Yeah, no, that was great. Yeah, I learned about this because Amber Nash tweeted about it, and I know Amber, She's the voice of Pam Poovy. She also is a performer at a theater I go to pretty frequently. And so it was one of the few times I was actually on Twitter. I was looking for any responses to the tech stuff, Twitter feed, and just happened to see that. I was like, aw, even though I haven't watched Archer for like 7 seasons, so I kind of really got to catch up. Anyway, all right, here we go. Due to lots of complicated legal reasons, the Indiana Jones franchise has never been available in full on Disney Plus. Until May 31st, that is, when all 3 Indiana Jones movies, plus a mistake that was made much, much later, plus the entire TV series where Indiana Jones is young and, in some episodes, less young and played by a different actor, all of that is coming to Disney Plus. So grab your whip and your fedora on May 31st. I will append one other little thing. I know we're violating this left and right.
I like young Indiana Jones.
Young Indiana Jones is actually really great. That's a great series. And there are 2 different young indies. Like, there's a young indie, and then there's a slightly less young indie. And it's for a while they alternated in episodes. But no, the thing I was going to mention is that as we're recording this, reviews are starting to come in for Dial of Destiny, which was shown at Cannes. And it's so funny to me that a lot of them are like just gushing about what a thrill ride this is. And then there are others who are like, this is dumb and brain dead. And I'm just like, wow, there's no middle ground. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. It'll be interesting for sure. This next story, if you're a literary nerd, I think that a literary geek, this is for you. Across the River and Into the Trees, which I think was the last full-length novel Hemingway published, is being turned into a movie by Bleecker Street. It stars Josh Hutcherson, Danny Houston, and Liev Schreiber and Matilda De Angelis. And it's about a World War II colonel who suffers from, I'm guessing, PTSD, and just his dealing with it and how people take him around the countryside of Venice to try to like cheer him up is what I get from the synopsis. But it's coming out. Bleecker Street has a bunch of movies being directed by women. I think this is one of them. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that'll make Simone de Rochefort of Polygon really happy. She is an enormous Hemingway fan. So that's, I hope she's listening. Okay. Loki fans won't have to wait much longer for another season featuring the God of Mischief, because season 2 of Loki is scheduled to debut on October 6th of this year. In addition, Echo, the spinoff from Hawkeye, will launch in late November. Personally, I'm curious how Loki will try to continue to set up Kang as the big bad for this cycle of Marvel movies, and whether Echo will feature a cameo or two by the Devil of Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, you're done. I expected so much more. That's my fault, not yours. Telltale, if you remember, did The Wolf Among Us and Walking Dead and Tales from Borderlands and Batman, a bunch of other stories in like a narrative adventure game sort of a style. They shut down in 2018 and they've come back together under new management, or I guess ownership, but they've got The Expanse, a Telltale series coming out. It comes out this July on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. And it's $40 or $45 if you want some extra DLC. If you like the expansion, this is a great way to continue living in that universe.
I'm glad to hear that they're back and making more stuff, because it was very sad when that company went under. Because while I didn't always love all their games, I appreciated what they were doing. You could argue that it was kind of like a choose-your-own-adventure in the style of a point-and-click adventure, but I didn't mind that. I thought it was cool.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. So Nick Cage is slated to play Nick Cage again, but this time it's not for a movie, it's not for a television show or anything like that, it's for a video game. namely the asynchronous multiplayer game Dead by Daylight, in which one player assumes the role of a supernatural killer and everyone else is a survivor trying to escape. Curiously, right now, we don't actually know if Nicolas Cage is supposed to be a survivor or a killer, but we should learn more on July 5th.
I have thoughts on that when we get, based on a conversation with a good friend, when we get to our actual discussion pieces.
Okay, because I kind of just love the idea of Nicolas Cage being the killer, and it's just him like grabbing you and talking to you about his career.
Something else I know you love, Jonathan, is Lord of the Rings, and it looks like Amazon has made a deal with Embracer Group to make a giant MMO game of Lord of the Rings set in Middle Earth. It's not gonna be.
That's Will Middle Smith. Earth. Welcome to Middle Earth.
It's not going to be based off of Rings of Power. No direct tie-in, but it will be based off of like the trilogy and the Hobbit and stuff like that. So if you like MMOs and you like Lord of the Rings and you want to play a Lord of the Ring MMO, keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. It's not the first time that they've tried to make, you know, role-playing style games off the Lord of the Rings franchise. I mean, that's kind of seems like a no-brainer, but in my experience, only a few of those have ever really been fun to play. Like, and some of them are the more brainless action games, like the Shadow of Mordor. Yeah. Okay. Hulu released a Blink and You'll Miss It teaser for Futurama, which is having a revival. It launches on July 24th, so get ready to join the whole gang. Bender, Professor Farnsworth, Leela, Stitch, Frylock, Master Shake. I could be mixing up my cartoons right now, and I really don't have anything else to say about it other than I hope it's better than the last revival. Or maybe I mean the revival before last, because I've lost track.
Things I've lost track of. WoW expansions. But now WoW is getting a new server type based on some player add-ins. And it's they're hardcore servers, which means that there are certain things you can't do. Like you can only do a dungeon, each dungeon once before you hit level 60. You can't use the auction house. You can't trade with other players. And most importantly, if you die, you don't get resurrected.
I thought you were going to say, if you die in the game, you die for real.
I mean, that would be truly hardcore. But it is interesting because one of the things that I know many of my friends got burnt out on was killing bears in the snow. And so maybe because if you died, you just went back and you killed more bears in the snow. Maybe this will make it interesting for people who had felt like they had conquered all of the challenge of the game.
Excellent. And I was going to say finally, but then I just went ahead and looked at our show lineup and saw that once again, Ariel has sneaked in yet another one at the very end.
Trixie!
Penultimately, in the latest battle between the Disney Corporation and the state of Florida, CEO Bob Iger announced that the company is canceling plans to build an employee campus in Orlando. It was to be a $1 billion project to house 2,000 employees, and part of the plan was to make a whole bunch of California-based Disney employees have to relocate to Florida. So from what I understand, this was not a really popular idea internally, so I'm sure it's actually a relief to a lot of Disney employees to hear this, while it's also kind of a smack in the face to Florida.
Yeah, I know that this is a like me adding one more story in here is kind of ruining the flow that you built in our podcast, but that's okay. And I apologize. There is a rumor, there's an exclusive that Hollywood Reporter put out yesterday saying that Eddie Murphy is in negotiations to star as Inspector Clouseau in a reboot of Pink Panther to be directed by Sonic the Hedgehog's Jeff Fowler. I think that's interesting. It's been a while since we've done Pink Panther movies. I used to like them.
We've had a few different Clouseaus, like Peter Sellers being the original.
Steve Martin.
There was one other one too, it was very poorly received, and I cannot remember which actor it was who played him, but it was another one as well. So I mean, the whole shtick there is it's a bumbling detective who typically is extremely clumsy and stupid, and yet somehow manages to come out on top, and mostly to the annoyance of the French police who are assigned to work with him. So it could be fun. It could also just be a lot more cultural insensitivity. We'll have to see.
Yeah. We'll see. Hopefully they keep it up to date. Well, that is all of our 30 seconds or less. I think we did pretty good. We didn't do too bad.
No, I mean, like, we're only 20 minutes in, so we've still got, you know, an hour for us to talk about everything else if we're going to stay on, you know, the track of what we've been previously doing.
And listen, that was, well, that can't be right. Hold on. That was 18 stories. So, you know, a little over a minute per is not bad. and also, like, also, yeah, we're 20 minutes in and we could go to an hour 20, or, you know, we could actually have a reasonably length episode. Let's see what happens. You guys can put your bets in now for aplomb.
Except you'll know, because you could just look at how long the episode is. We'll put our bets in now.
I'll put, yeah, okay. Okay, so normally we talk about what we've watched in the last weeks. So mm-hmm. Do you want to do that?
Sure, yeah. So last night, I had the opportunity to watch something. So my wife is out of town. And when she's out of town, I can watch stuff that she normally wouldn't want to watch. And I'm not feeling like I'm taking time away from family and all that kind of stuff. So I decided to watch Ant-Man and the Quantum of Solace, or whatever that movie is called. And because my wife has a massive phobia of insects, she will not watch Ant-Man. She does not like even the cartoonish ants in films like A Bug's Life. So Ant-Man's right out. So I watched it finally. And I finally understood why Ariel referred to Ant-Man as her favorite recent Star Wars film. Because as I was watching, I'm like, oh my gosh, this feels like it's one of the Star Wars prequels. It had more of a prequel feeling to me than the most recent trilogy did. But yeah, it felt like it could have fit right into the Star Wars prequels from a stylistic perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. It had some things I liked. Overall, it was a mediocre but enjoyable movie for me.
I will say, without giving any spoilers, because there may still be people out there who haven't seen it yet who still want to see it, I will say I feel like they are handling Kang very poorly. Like, not, first of all, they're putting the Jonathan Majors controversies aside for a moment, because that's its own thing that needs to be addressed. The actual story crafting of Kang perplexes me, because I'm not certain they're doing a very good job to set him up as a big threat for this cycle of Marvel. And I don't want to go further into detail, because to do so would require some spoilers. I'll just say that I feel like it's a weird direction they're going in.
I agree. I do feel like, though, maybe the threat of Kang, and this isn't super spoiler because they addressed it in Loki, is the fact that there's a multiverse of him. A multitude, yeah. Of, like, infinite numbers of him. And so,
but like, there are at least a few of them, of him, who have notably turned on the rest of him, because that's who he is, which suggests that there might not be that many of Kang by the time we get around to another Avengers movie.
I mean, I think I get the impression, again, from Loki, that there are more bad Kangs than there are anti-Kangs. I know that when we were talking about it earlier offline, you had said that, like, they didn't defeat Thanos like they defeated Kang and Loki. Like, Thanos was a threat right up until the end, right? But also Kevin Feige has said that Kevin Feige. Darn, I looked this up and I can't remember now. Thank you. Has said that, like, they realize they have to change how how their stories conclude and the storylines and make them more interesting and make them more diverse. So maybe they thought that putting another unbeatable Thanos in there just as like as a Deus Ex Machina was not a great way to go for this next phase, and they wanted to try something fresh.
It's possible, but I think putting a very beatable villain as your big bad is also not the best choice. Like, there's got to be a happy medium between here's a guy we've seen in various versions getting his proverbial butt handed to him, but he's back again and he's really mad this time. Like, I don't know. We'll see. Like, there's still time, and I have a feeling that a lot of stuff is going to get addressed anyway, because as we've been saying, a lot of the more recent MCU movies have received kind of a colder reception for this last couple of, like, this last phase. And like, then we already know there are people who are determined to hate the Marvels. But I have a feeling that has more to do with preconceived ideas and biases and less to do with the movie. I mean, maybe the movie will turn out to be terrible. I think it looks fun.
I think it looks really good too. I love Kamala Khan. So, I mean, I love them all, but I really love the actress who plays Kamala Khan. She brings her to life in such a great way. Yeah, I also watched a Marvel movie this past weekend. Was it this weekend? Time has no meaning to me this week. It's been very busy. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Mm-hmm. No spoilers, because I know a bunch of people haven't seen it yet. Even having looked up what happens in the movie, it was a good movie. I'm glad I watched it. It had a lot of wonderful Guardians of the Galaxy moments to love for the franchise. Even knowing what happened, there were many parts that were very difficult for me to watch. And I'm glad I saw it, but I don't think it's one that I will seek out to watch again. I love watching Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2. I've watched them a few times, but this one, just despite its goodness and despite all the fun bits, I don't want to go through the bits that were not fun for me again.
Right. There were some sequences that were harrowing that you would rather not relive.
And, you know, this is not a spoiler. We know that the story is about Rocket's past, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the stuff dealing with his past was difficult for me because I don't like animal endangerment, and that was the situation Rocket was in. So I don't think that's a spoiler, but it was still a good movie, and I'm glad I watched it.
The fact that Rocket has a whole lot of metal parts on him, because that's, you see that in the character design of Rocket Raccoon, tells you that his past was a violent one, and so having to sit through and actually see that, I'm sure, is rough. Like, I still haven't seen it, but I do know about that, and I really wonder how that will affect younger audience members when they go see the film.
Yeah, I told my good friend and sister that this might be a little scary for her younger kids, and that she should watch it first. That's what I would suggest to parents with kids who are, you know, under 14, I would say, is watch it first and see.
Yeah.
Unlike the D&D movie, which I'm like, oh, this is great. There's a couple of swear words, but otherwise it's fantastic and you should watch it. And this is just a level of scary and adult situations. But I will say this.
Mostly fun. Yeah. Yes.
It's mostly fun. While it is not necessary to watch the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special first, I would recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there's at least a character who reappears in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 who was introduced in that holiday special. And plus, there's a plot, or at least a character element, that's also introduced in that I know is referenced in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And if you haven't seen the holiday special, you'll be like, well, that came out of nowhere.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah.
Now let's get back into this beautiful flow you created in our episode, Jonathan.
Yeah, so I had ended about the 30 seconds or less about Disney because my first story is about Disney. So the first story is that the Disney Galactic Star Cruiser Hotel, which hasn't been open that long, isn't going to be open much longer either. Word has now broken out. Disney has announced that in September, the Galactic Star Cruiser will be going on its final missions and then is going to close. And in fact, people who had booked a vacation that would have taken place after the closing are now being contacted to see if they want to rebook at a different time before other people are allowed to make reservations. So for right now, as you're listening to this, if you were thinking, oh, shoot, I really wanted to try that out. Oh, man. Reservations are down. Well, they're down on purpose because they want to give the folks who already had a booked vacation the chance to rebook before they open up dates for you know, the general public.
Yeah, I have friends who are sad about this because they've been and they loved it. And in fact, they were going again and hopefully we'll be able to get rescheduled. But I'm sad about this because I love the concept. But the price point, like, because I LARP, you know, and this is like a LARP or an interactive murder mystery all weekend. And while I still can't grasp how they would handle it with so many people, even at 100 rooms, that's a lot of PCs to handle. Like, I love the concept. And I love that my friends who have gone really enjoyed it. It was so expensive.
Yeah, no, I love the idea. And my wife, who... like, I wouldn't think of her as being the world's biggest Star Wars fan, but she just loved this idea. She really was curious about it. She's a big Disney fan, and she does, like, really, you know, intense and immersive theming. Like, that's really cool to her. And we have gone on actual Disney cruises together, and the Disney cruise ships have phenomenal theming throughout them that it's really, really nice to walk through. So I think that was part of it. But it is hard to justify the expense because you're not actually going anywhere, right? You're in a hotel. You do get to go to Hollywood Studios for one of the days that you're there for part of your stay. That's included in your stay. And you get all your meals included. But it is as expensive, if not more so, than taking an actual cruise that takes you to real world places.
Yes, and the difference is that the Disney Galactic Star Cruise was like $5,000 for 2 days. And you can spend $5,000 at an all-inclusive for an entire week, like a seven-day vacation.
So the big difference there being, obviously, the Star Cruiser is populated by people who are playing roles. Like all the cast members you encounter, they're all playing parts. So that's an added expense, right? Because you're actually, the people you're interacting with, that's entertainment. It's not just staff. They are populating a world. And I am all about paying staff what they're worth. I'm all about making sure that the cast is fairly compensated, especially if they're doing something as intense as a fully immersive multi-day experience. Like that's asking a lot. So
that's a lot of work, y'all.
Yeah, like Ariel and I, we both are Renaissance Festival veterans, and that was, you know, that would be a full day of being in character and interacting with people, but it ends. like at 6 p.m., you go backstage and you're done. You don't have to, like, have an evening shift or anything like that. And so part of me is, like, I can understand the expense in the sense that it is an immersive entertainment experience, and you're also paying in order for that experience to exist, right? In order to pay for all the elements that go into making that happen. And really, it comes to a reckoning of, are you getting the value for your money? And if you're not, is there a way of presenting it where you're not exploiting the cast members and underpaying them or making them feel unappreciated or overworking them to death in order to deliver this experience? It's a very thin line to walk. And I think it just is a case where Disney made a bet. The bet failed to pay off. There just aren't enough curious Star Wars diehard fans who also happen to have that kind of discretionary income where they can that much money on a short vacation.
I mean, and like I was talking with some of our Disney diehard friends, and they were like, yeah, especially after pandemic, because costs of everything rose. And the first thing that people cut out of their budget were like luxury vacations. So it was just a really bad time to launch as well.
Yeah. Well, and it's sad to see, because Disney has had some really incredible immersive entertainment experiences. And they have always been beloved by the base, right? The fan base for those things. But they haven't lasted, right? This goes throughout like lots of different things. There are a lot of different attractions that used to depend upon a live cast member participating in the attraction as part of the experience, and a lot of those have been cut way back. The Jungle Cruise being one of the few exceptions, but like you think of things like the Great Movie Ride that used to be at Hollywood Studios, that depended upon cast members to deliver part of the experience, and that was taken away several years ago now. And of course, Ariel was a fanatic of a specific Disney entertainment venue that had almost a cult-like following. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, I have before. The Adventurers Club was a part of Pleasure Island, which was full of nightclubs. And back when I would go to Disney often enough to hit the nightclubs, I quite enjoyed it. And the clubs were usually pretty full, but they dozed that to do basically was Downtown Disney now, and the boardwalk.
Disney Springs.
Not not even Downtown Disney Springs. You're correct, and it's not the boardwalk; it's Disney Springs. That tells you how much I've been there since then. I still enjoy Disney, but life reasons kept me from going back as often. But Adventures Club was also interactive. It was you all play characters for an evening of 1930s adventuring, like, society, and you go in and there are things on the walls to talk to you and puppets and the characters that play with you, and it was wonderful. And I know a lot of those actors have gone on to do other immersive things at Disney. Galaxy's Edge is still pretty immersive. The Rise of the Resistance does still require the people who help run the ride,
right,
to make it an experience. And a lot of, and you know, both at like the Marvel campus and at Galaxy's Edge, they've worked hard to make sure, not everybody does it, but worked hard to make sure that like the people who are selling you drinks and the people who are serving you food and the people who are picking up trash all have stories as to why, what planet they're from, why they're here, so that it is more immersive. So like there, it is still there. I'm not going to get into everything about like union actors versus non-union. I don't think it's my place to even talk about it with Disney stuff. So I probably shouldn't even know in some cases, but Adventurers Club was wonderful and it closed. And I'm very sad because I would go there all the time. It was an air conditioned, able to drink way for me to enjoy Renaissance Festival without having to shop at stores.
Yeah, it's that sort of interactive theater. Like if you've ever been to any kind of theatrical event where there's audience participation, you know, not necessarily being called up on stage and then you're the butt of a joke, but rather like things like sing-along screenings of movies, that kind of stuff. It's where you are part of a crowd, you are also all engaged in this activity. You're being entertained. You're also participating. It builds a sense of community. It's a special sort of thing when you get to do one of those experiences. And, you know, Disney, when they started creating the parks in the first place, Walt Disney's plan was to try and create environments where it felt like you were being pulled into like a Disney movie or a Disney series, right? Like that was the whole concept, was you are entering into this and you are now part of this ongoing story. And that's what makes those kinds of shows and attractions really special to me, because they seem to really tap into that spirit, but they are admittedly very challenging to keep going. Like they are expensive to run. They maybe limited in how they generate revenue. They require a lot of buy-in and participation from the cast. And if the cast isn't up to it, it's not going to be a good experience. So it's a tough thing to get right. But if you do get it right, I think it brings value beyond the money it brings in, right? Because that's what gets people like you, Ariel, absolutely hooked. And it means you're going to come back whenever you possibly can, because it's such a rewarding experience.
And I'm going to buy a bazillion drinks and snacks and things like that. Yeah, Adventurers Club was my dream job. I even auditioned. Well, no, I auditioned for Finding Nemo the musical, but I was hoping that they'd shoehorn me into the Adventurers Club. I will say, this is a random thought, going back to the Star Cruiser. Mm-hmm. Even though it's only 2 days, like, I know that when I have run LARPs, because when you run a LARP, you do it from, like, game on, like, you usually get to site early, you set up, game on is usually around like 9 a.m. You go to bed around like 3 in the morning when the players are all done, and you get up early the next morning to run stuff for the early risers, and it's a lot. So I also understand, and as a player even, after like a weekend, you're like, oh, I'm so tired. So you probably wouldn't want more than 2 or 3 days, as fun of an experience as it is, because you'd just be exhausted.
Well, yeah, because this isn't really a Star Wars themed hotel, right? It's more than that, because you're not expected to leave that hotel at all during that, except for the one excursion to Batuu you do for Hollywood Studios. Other than that, you're there and you're doing activities, and you know, it's up to you how much you want to participate and how much you want to do, but it's not like you're going out to lounge at the pool or anything. You are part of this immersive experience. And so it's not the same thing as lounging around a resort, or even, you know, getting up early and heading out to the parks. And the only time you ever see your hotel room is when you come back to crash. It's different from that. So I think that's another part of it, is that a lot of people just didn't have their minds wrapped around what this was.
Yeah. Although you could lounge, and I bet there is a pool. I bet there is a pool there somewhere. I bet. But why would you want to if you spend that much money to be part of a story?
Yeah. I mean, unless there are Jawas in the pool, because those guys, they can party.
Yeah. But you know what? I bet Disney has learned from this, and next they're going to open up a Haunted Mansion hotel
with
100 rooms.
You're joking, but you know. You know I would be like on the phone, on hold, trying to reserve a room if that were true.
I know a bunch of people who would be, if it had a lower price point than Galactic Star Cruiser. I knew a bunch of people who wanted to do the Galactic Star Cruiser and just couldn't afford it. It depends on how expensive your haunted B&B stay would be. But no, I wasn't joking. I completely believe that they might do that. There are no rumors. That's just me spitballing. Disney, if you do it.
Throw her a little kickback. But no, what Ariel was attempting to do was segue to our next story. It's just she did so in a way where I was like, shut up. That is the best idea.
I know, though, right? Well, I wouldn't say there, because I'm a scaredy cat. But yes. So, Haunted Mansion has a new trailer out, and it's pretty cute.
Yeah, actually, there's bits of it that are kind of intense. Yes. Not like I think, you know, kids who are like 10 or over should be able to handle it just fine. Like, it looks to me like the kind of stuff I saw when I was a kid, and I enjoyed it, even the bits that were a little spooky scary. But I dug the trailer. I really liked the sequence they chose for the very end of the trailer, which involves two characters describing a spirit to a police sketch artist, and it ends up looking exactly like one of the concept art pieces that was the inspiration for the Haunted Mansion attraction.
Yeah. I agree. Like, it looks pretty cute. That's because they balanced cute and fun bits with the scary bits. It also looked pretty scary to me. I will agree that there are moments that were intense that would probably still scare me personally as an adult. But the human interaction bits were delightful. So, I hope the overall movie has as good of a balance.
Same. I think it, yeah, I'm hoping that it will be a surprise delight the same way the very first Pirates of the Caribbean movie was. And obviously it's a lot of the same team that worked on Pirates that worked on this movie, but you never know. Like, I still haven't watched the Jungle Cruise movie. I just could never work up the motivation to actually push play on the darn thing. So I'm hoping that's not going to be my reaction when we get closer to Haunted Mansion hitting theaters.
I was about to say, my guess is that you're going to see the theater, but like, you like scary stuff. So the Haunted Mansion is more your bag anyhow.
Yeah, but like Haunted Mansion's like, that's not real scary. That's like kiddie scary. Yeah,
that's true. I forgot how interactive the line into the Haunted Mansion is.
Well, and they've added to it, right? Because originally, way back in the day, you would walk through the line, this at Disney World, not this different from Disneyland. But at Disney World, you would walk through the line and there'd be a little cemetery and you could read some amusing epitaphs on the gravestones. And that was about it. But then several years ago, they added a whole bunch of other stuff, including like interactive elements that if you touch them, they play sounds and that kind of thing, or they squirt you with water.
Yeah, I hadn't ever seen those before. Like, I went to Magic Kingdom for the first time in years and years and years last year with some family. That was a fun treat for me because I didn't know they had done that.
Yeah.
Another fun treat for me. Are you ready to segue on?
Yep.
Is that Doctor Who has dropped a new trailer with the titles for all of their specials. The titles, whatever, but just the content of each episode, the little clip they give us for each episode looks super fun to me, and I am really into it.
I'll tell you what I'm really into. I'm really into Neil Patrick Harris's villain character.
Yeah, I think that's like the third special. So like you're going to have to watch two specials to get to him.
Or I can just watch one out of context and just enjoy it.
I guess you can do that. Actually, these specials. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say he made me think of like if you were to take a, you know, like the classic image of the stage magician and combine it with the master of ceremonies from Cabaret, that's what you would get.
That's exactly accurate. I will say that this trailer, I haven't finished up Jodie Whittaker's seasons. I've talked about my opinions of her, my positive opinions of her as a doctor versus some of the writing for her doctor. But now the completionist in me wants to catch up before these specials drop. I'm gonna have to be quick. Thankfully, I have HBO and I can do that.
And they look good. Like it looks like it's really well made. And I was never the biggest Doctor Who fan anyway. I tried, and then eventually just my motivation ran out for that entirely. And I haven't really watched anything beyond the first couple of Matt Smith episodes. So I am generations behind at this point. But these did look like they're well made and they look entertaining and also exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like Donna Noble is my favorite companion. I know I'm not in the majority there, but I absolutely loved her. And the fact that she's going to be back, I'm super interested to see what they're going to do with all of it. Especially the second episode, Redacted.
My favorite companion was Nebula.
That's old school. Or are you talking about Guardians of the Galaxy again?
I was talking about Guardians of the Galaxy because Karen Gillan played Nebula and she was
She was a companion
in Doctor Who.
She's very few people's favorite companion, Jonathan.
I know, but I was making a joke.
She's a wonderful actress. I enjoyed her in Doctor Who and I liked Amy Pond and I've even cosplayed Amy Pond. But really, Karen Gillan took off for me as an actress after that, like Jumanji and Guardians of the Galaxy. She's just really, I appreciate her so much more now than I did back then. No fault of her own. You know, you like NPH's magician cabaret guy, and maybe he can just go over and do what he did for Doctor Who at the Tonys, and that way it doesn't have to be scripted.
So there was because of the writer's strike here in the United States, there was a real concern that this might mean that the Tonys would not be able to go on, partly because, you know, there are writers who write these shows. Like, they write the jokes, they write the lead-ins that people say when they're presenting awards. The only thing that's not written down, besides, like, you know, maybe an off-the-cuff joke someone makes without running it by anyone first, are the acceptance speeches. Everything else is written. Well, you can't do that during a strike. You're not allowed to. Mm-hmm. And then there was also the additional possibility that writers might picket the event. And if they did that, then people who work behind the scenes, like all the people who run the cameras or run the lights or things like that, they might choose not to cross a picket line, which would mean the Tonys would not, like, they could still happen, but they wouldn't be televised.
Yeah. So originally they were like, well, we could do on, because originally the Tonys asked for a waiver from the Writers Guild, because the Writers Guild and the guild that oversees Broadway actors and stuff are not the same. But the WGA said, no, we're not going to give you a waiver. So they're like, well, we could do an unscripted televised, or we could do an untelevised event. But they're going to televise. WGA is not striking, or not picketing the show. So I don't think this is the first time we've had an untelevised Tony or an unscripted Tonys, because I think it happened during the last writer's strike as well, but I'm not certain. So don't quote me on that. Yeah. Buckle up, guys, because SAG-AFTRA just sent out the vote to whether they are willing to strike or not when the contract is up in June. So we don't have the results of that.
Okay, got it. But yeah, say, and of course, the Directors Guild, their contract's also up in June. So
yeah, I don't follow that as much because I'm not a director, but.
Yeah, but a lot of the planets are aligning right now, and for lots of reasons, and most of them come down to traditionally studios have nearly all the power in those relationships until you get to a point where people can collectively bargain and force change. That so that way the rising tide will lift all boats, because obviously you're always going to have a few standouts who are like the superstars in their field. They're not necessarily the most talented, but they are the most sought after. They're looked at as box office draws, and they get enormous deals, like crazy deals that sound like you won the lottery, right? But that's the exception. That's like the top 0.5%. And everybody else is at a very different level. And it's only through this collective bargaining that they're able to secure the compensation and the benefits and the consideration that they need in order to do what they do.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, there are actors out there who have worked 20 years in the field, had lead roles in feature films, and never have gotten paid above scale.
Yeah.
Which scale, if you think on it, like the per day amount for scale is a decent amount of pay. You're going through a lot though. It's a long day, and there's a lot of work, and there's a lot of stuff you may or may not be put through on your day on set. However, it's not enough to make you rich.
No,
unless you're working every day of every month.
Right, exactly. I was about to say, like, you know, these productions, not every film is like a, you know, 120-day long shoot or whatever. It's not all like a Stanley Kubrick production. Some movies, you know, they get shot in a month and a half, and then they wrap. And if you are working during that month and a half, it's great for that month and a half. But once it's over, you need to line something else up, or else you are having to figure out how to keep your money to stretch so that you can continue to make ends meet while you land your next gig. Like that's the reality of the business, whether you're a writer or an actor, less so for directors, but still, I mean, especially for like independent directors, it's a case.
Mm-hmm. But like writers and actors are largely pushing for better residuals and also just better wages, right? Like they want living wages because these contracts are long.
Yeah.
And a lot of writers, especially with micro rooms and the way that writers are kind of being hired now to fix up other people's scripts, which is not to script doctor, which is not like, that's not a new concept, right? But it's happening more and more. And so that's a different pay scale from my understanding. Yes. And so like a lot of these people aren't even living like a middle class life. They end up being low income.
There are Hollywood writers out there who are living the more typical LA lifestyle, which means they're renting a place with several other people. They've got roommates, right? Like it's not like everyone's got that house on in the hills where they look out over Hollywood and the shooting star goes overhead and all that. Yeah. That's the exception, not the rule. So, so again, solidarity with the writers. We love Broadway. We love theater. Yes. So we're glad to see that the Tonys are still going on. No telling what that show's going to be like without writers. Here's hoping it's okay. We're not going to get a big opening number like the ones that Neil Patrick Harris used to do.
That said, I'll still watch because Shucked, I've talked about it on the show before, is nominated. And I know somebody in that. You all know that by now. And thank you, Jonathan, for reining me in. I was about to go into all of the background costs that people don't factor into an actor's life. And that's a different topic for a different day.
Maybe we'll do a discussion episode on a day when we actually don't have that much news. We keep thinking that's going to happen, and yet it doesn't.
Yeah. So there were a couple of things that are in our actual discussion pieces that I feel like could have gone into 30 seconds or less and went into our discussion pieces when I thought it was going to be a short episode. Such as, we're getting a four-part Tim Burton docuseries on his movie process
in life. So I'm surprised you didn't reference this documentary about how Tim Burton became a famous sad boy.
Yeah.
Or the day that Tim Burton discovered curly cues or swirly swirls, because they keep showing up in his movies.
I wasn't clever. I just put it down as ever wondered how Tim Burton got so Burton-y. But you're right. I should have put him in my sad boy glaring in the corner club.
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously
Tim Burton went... Jon Snow and Edgar Allan Poe.
Poe, Snow, and Burton. Tim Burton, obviously, he's directed movies that don't fall into the like outcast, gloomy kind of goth aesthetic approach. You know, he's famous for those because of things like Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice and even Batman. But he's done other stuff too. I think for a lot of people. When you hear the name Tim Burton, you're thinking of a specific kind of aesthetic, the kind of thing you saw in the Wednesday series or in Beetlejuice.
Yeah. I hope they focus a lot on Wednesday and Beetlejuice. Although I'm personally going to be disappointed if they don't have an entire one of the four parts devoted to Superman Lives.
Wow. All right. Well, did he do Superman? I know he was going
to do supposed to direct it.
Right, and Nicolas Cage was going to play Superman.
Yeah, and then, I mean, and there's already a documentary about it with Silent Bob. All of a sudden,
oh, Kevin Smith. Looting me.
Yeah, so there's already a documentary about it. But if they don't reference it at least once, I'm going to be sad.
Yeah. Well, next up, we got a trailer for a science fiction film called The Creator, which I told... Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped the mission. Well, we could circle back to Mission Impossible.
No, it's fine. Yes, The Creator. The Creator. go to The Creator.
I accidentally skipped a line in our Excel sheet. So yeah, we've got a trailer for The Creator as well as a trailer for Mission Impossible, which we'll talk about in a second. But the trailer for The Creator, that prompted me to call it, what was it, Children of Robots? Because it made me think of Children of Men.
Yes.
There's something else I called it too, but I can't remember what it was.
I don't remember. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, me too. It's not that important. It probably wasn't that funny.
Our listeners don't want to sit and listen while I look up an old comment and G-chat with you forever. I don't understand. I mean,
if it was a really good one, maybe. But I just called it Children of Robots. No, I didn't. I did not have a different alternative title besides that because I just found it.
Gotcha. Yeah. I shared this with a different friend group because they like science fiction things. And everybody was really divisive. Some people were like, this looks like it could be fun. And other people were like, this looks so dumb and boring and same hat. It appealed to me. Like, there have been a lot of other AI stories coming out recently, or trailers coming out and things like that. Other than Mrs. Davis, I think this one appeals to me the most of all of like the AI-centric stories we've been talking about lately. And I don't know, maybe it's just the aesthetic of it.
Yeah, I like it. It does feel very derivative of a lot of different things because like the basic premise is we created AI. It got out of hand. It became sentient and began to rebel against humans, which is following down the Terminator storyline, right? Like that's the Terminator. And then humans start to fight back and they're trying to figure out a way to stop the robots, which again, still Terminator. But then there's a twist in that the major weapon, apparently based on the trailer, the major weapon that they need is actually a young android boy. And that starts to you start to see a lot of science fiction tropes kind of fall in line to create this particular story. Doesn't mean that the story is going to be bad. I can see why some people are saying it feels familiar because it is tapping into a lot of themes and stories that other movies have already kind of explored, but this may still be a really good one. The trailer didn't super grab me, but again, that doesn't necessarily mean the movie's bad.
I thought the performances in the trailers were nice, and there were a couple moments that I really liked. I'll probably watch it.
The design of the androids to have a hole in their head to be really distracting.
I like it. I think it's cool. Mission Impossible, part one of a new one, is also coming out.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, the Mission Impossible movies are well-crafted action films that almost all of them have the exact same storyline, which is, the people who are supposed to be on our side are really the bad guys. Spoiler alert for every Mission Impossible movie. Like I think there might be just one Mission Impossible movie where the villain doesn't turn out to be a different, like, agency in the United States. And part of me thinks that the reason for that is very cynical because it's a way to sell the movie overseas. Because if you don't make the bad guy some other nation or something, then you don't have to worry about offending anyone when you're trying to sell your movie in like China.
I also feel like if you don't make it. So there's a fine line, right? Because like if you are trying to make a political statement, like DC and Marvel, for instance. Marvel with Black Panther can make some great statements about society and culture and things like that, and do it in a way that is really accessible and digestible. DC is really bad at that, I think. Like the Black Adam storyline, it didn't work. So you can make your bad guy a not existing country and make it work. But yeah, if you make it an existing country, then that's not really fair to the majority of the population there. So,
I mean, no, but the flip side of that is you're saying over and over again that your own nation is so corrupt that all of its agencies are turning on each other over. Like, that's not a good story either, right? Like, I don't know, man. Like, maybe ultimately the thing you have to walk away from the Mission Impossible series is that the Mission Impossible group themselves, they're really the bad guys. Yeah, there's all these different movies where they're the heroes, but they're actually the bad guys because everybody else is always trying to stop them. And by everybody else, I mean everybody else in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, this one, the trailer looks fun and exciting. I just can't tell it. And I've watched some Mission Impossible movies and I like action movies and they're fine, but they're nondescript to me, like you said.
I have not watched all of them. I know I've seen the first two, And then I saw the one where Henry Cavill loads up his arms.
Okay. The one with the mustache?
It's in the bathroom. It's in the bathroom fight scene. He does this thing where he's got his arm, like he's putting his fists up like he's about to do Queen of Marksberry rules boxing, and then he does a boom boom with his fists where everyone calls it him cocking his arms to get ready for his fight.
I didn't watch that Mission Impossible. I watched Justice League instead, where they had to CGI his face because he couldn't take off his Mission Impossible mustache for the reshoots.
Yeah, he had to have a digitally enhanced upper lip.
Which did not work at least 50% of the time. Tybalt agrees with me. Like they could make individuals or AI bad guys in Mission Impossible just to shake it up.
Yeah, but someone's going to make the AI, and you know who it's going to be? Some other agency in the United States. That's my problem.
Cool. Well, let's go from large-scale corruption to individual corruption with our next trailer.
So next up, we got a trailer for a series called Based on a True Story, which is a series. Kaley Cuoco's in it. It's a series that's about a couple. The wife of the couple is absolutely obsessed with true crime podcasts. And then the couple end up deciding that they think they figured out who a serial killer is, and they want to get the serial killer to join them to make a true crime podcast, because they figure that has never been done before, and it'll mean their podcast will become a spectacular success, and that will guarantee them financial security and make them famous and all this other kind of stuff. And I thought the trailer was amusing and entertaining, as someone who has worked in podcasting for 15 years, it also amused me because I have thoughts and opinions about the whole true crime genre.
Yeah, agree. When the trailer first started off, I was like, is this going to be over the line? Because like, there's some movies like this where it's like on the line of like, is it too crass for me to really enjoy? And I was worried this might be it. But as the trailer went on, I thought it actually looked charming at points and fun at points, which is surprising because it's by the creatives for both The Boys and Ozarks worked on it. And those are both horribly depressing and shocking properties. Yeah. So
really super dark.
Yeah. But this didn't look as dark. It had some, at least the trailer had some delightful moments.
Yeah. I agree. I probably will check it out. One thing I'm not sure I'm going to check out, and I'm very disappointed that it's no longer the last item in our discussion.
Oh, well, we can make it the last item.
Yeah. Well, just because traditionally we end with a horror movie trailer.
Well, yeah, the trailer after that might be a horror movie too. So,
Well, let's just stick with what we've got, which is that okay. We got a trailer, or really a teaser, for the Five Nights at Freddy's film, which is funny because Nicolas Cage already made a movie that was essentially a Five Nights at Freddy's ripoff, so there really isn't any need to do an actual Five Nights at Freddy's movie, but we're getting one anyway.
But you didn't like the Nicolas Cage one. Some of our listeners did.
It's okay. I also don't like this teaser, so it's fine.
So this teaser kind of starts off with Josh Hutcherson, who we talked about earlier as being in the Ernest Hemingway movie. And whenever people reference what he's from, it's never from Detention, which I thought was one, or sometimes it's Hunger Games, but it's never from Detention, which was a movie I think that he wrote and directed and starred in that was ridiculous time travel noir fun. Not super high budget, but you should check it. Like it's fun. It's a dumb, fun movie. My favorite thing he's done. This trailer actually looks kind of scary to me. Whereas like, I know the video game would scare me at points because it's all about jump scares, right? That's the entire point of the game, of the video game. This trailer probably will have jump scares, but it also looks like they're throwing in some Saw type elements, and that's scary to me. But I had some conversations with some friends who are like, okay, this stars Josh Hutcherson. Does it star Josh Hutcherson the same way that Saw stars Carrie Elwes? And I'm quoting my friend directly, that Saw stars Carrie Elwes or Scream stars Drew Barrymore. And if they do that, I think it'll be a horrible shame.
Well, it all depends. They have to have a protagonist, because otherwise, what? Who do you terrorize, right? You got to have somebody who is in the role of being terrorized by this. So the game series, if you're not familiar with it, is that you take on the part of a, usually it's like either a maintenance person or a security personnel. It depends on which of the entries we're talking about, because there's several games in the Five Nights at Freddy's series, but they're all based on a similar premise, which is that you're at this Chuck E. Cheese style entertainment place for kids. You are there to have an overnight shift. The animatronics actually have minds of their own. They are also psychotic and murderous. And so you're trying to get through the night and survive by using different little techniques to lure the animatronics away from you and to prevent them from getting to you. And that's the whole thing of the game. And like Ariel was saying, it's really all about trying to do your best to avoid the jump scare, which represents you, your character dying. But really the scary part is just that you got an unexpected fright. So the movie needs to do more than that, or else it's going to be a pretty lame experience.
Yeah. But that made me wonder if Nick Cage in the Dead by Daylight video game will also be the same, like, Drew Barrymore stars in Scream sort of a thing.
Well, I mean, the Nick Cage one, like, he doesn't say anything in that movie. He doesn't have
any lines.
Oh, no,
I meant the video game. I meant the video game.
Oh, Dead by Daylight, right.
Yes, no, that's what I said.
I think he's going to be either, I mean, he's likely going to be either a survivor, which means he'll have some lines that he'll say as he runs around and as you control him to try and escape a killer. Or he'll be the killer, in which case he'll have weird lines as he's stalking everybody. If he's a survivor, I sure hope they let you do it where all the people playing survivors can all be Nicolas Cage. Can you imagine playing like Jason trying to chase down four different Nicolas Cages?
That thought broke my brain, Jonathan.
You'd have to call it Nicolas Uncaged.
I appreciate Nicolas Cage. I don't appreciate everything he does. He's done a lot of movies that just are not my cup of tea, but I appreciate how much he throws himself into all his characters.
Commits?
Yeah, he really commits to his characters.
Yeah.
So the last trailer we're going to talk about might be a nightmare to some people. It's about theater camp.
Yes, we got a trailer for the film Theater Camp. It is actually based off a short film that came out a few years ago, and Ben Platt was part of it back then. He's part of it now, and as you might imagine, it's a film about a theater camp where a bunch of geeky kids get together they're all like theater nerds, and they're all there to learn theater stuff. And it has elements of the old 80s cliche of let's put on a show and save the camp. Like, that's part of the plot. But I had to read up on what was actually going on, because the trailer, like, you get little bits of what's going on, but you don't get like the backstory. And the backstory is that there's a woman who runs this theater camp. She goes into a coma, apparently, and her son, who is like this frat boy bro type, tech bro kind of guy, is then put in charge of being the administrator for the theater camp. And meanwhile, the counselors, the grown-up theater kids who are just as geeky, and so Ben Platt being one of them, are trying their best to try and make sure that the camp doesn't, you know, run totally into the ground.
Yeah. It definitely looks like there's some really cute, funny bits. It's definitely relatable to a theater. I never went to theater camp, but I am a huge theater nerd. You all know this. Why am I stating the obvious? Jonathan and I are both huge theater nerds. And some of it looks really cute, and some of it looks very like Wet Hot American Summer style of humor.
Oh, no, I got total Wet Hot American Summer vibes.
Yeah.
From parts of the... Not as absurd as Wet Hot American Summer, obviously, but... There's definitely some overlap in humor there.
Yeah, there's some I don't want to say low, but there's some bluer humor in it. There is a really great, there's a really great moment in the trailer that just made me laugh so hard because it was obvious, but it was, they're like, well, we have the musicals and then we have the straight plays. And they're like, what is a straight play? And they're like, it's not a musical. And they're like, okay, so what's a gay play? And another person's like, oh, I guess it would be a musical. Which, you know, it's not true. Straight plays are just plays without music, and musicals are musicals. Right.
But, it was that joke, that whole setup, like, literally, it's the kind of joke designed for the audience to say the punchline before the character does, right? Like, that's what that joke is. And if there was anyone who watched that trailer and didn't already say musicals before the character in the scene says musicals, it would shock me, because that's the way that joke was written.
And it's probably, that movie is probably not for you then. I don't know if I'll watch it. I'm really intrigued. The trailer definitely feels like some self-flagellation for the geekiness I felt being a theater kid.
It definitely, like, it has moments in it where obviously, like, counselors are, they're trying to inspire the kids, but they're also like they're trying to be the tough realist too about you guys are the best of the best. This is going to destroy you. Like that kind of thing. Like those are the jokes, but it still seems like overall the film has a kind of like a sweet core to it, as opposed to some other theater camp style movies where it's all about the kids finding ways to absolutely sabotage one another so that they can take center stage and the other person can't.
Yeah. Which I appreciate more. You know what else I appreciate, Jonathan?
Me?
I appreciate you, and you won the bet. Our episode went over an hour.
Yep. Yep. I mean, all I had to do was talk slow.
Using my own tactics against me. if you guys appreciated what we've talked about, if you want to tell us the minutia that we're missing in Mission Impossible, or if you just want to tell Jonathan congratulations on having a better grasp of how long this episode would take, you should write us and tell us. How can they do that, Jonathan?
Well, you got to drive yourself down to the farmer's market on the outskirts of town. There you're going to find yourself one booth that's selling packets of pepper bush seeds. You're going to get yourself one of them packets. Gonna drive yourself back home, dig a little hole in the yard, throw one of them seeds in there, cover it up, give it some water, and let it grow. It's gonna take a while, but eventually in late summer, it's gonna start blossoming with those first peppers. You're gonna harvest them peppers, and you're gonna take them inside your house. You're gonna grind them up real good, mix in some cilantro, some onion, and you're gonna make yourself a salsa with that. And then the next Tuesday, when it's taco night, you take that there salsa and you slather it on one of them tacos. You gobble that son of a gun down as fast as you can say lickety split. And then, when you're sitting there in bed, regretting your last decisions as your stomach is doing somersaults in your tum-tum, you're gonna have yourself a waking nightmare dream. There you're gonna see a man with no face. He's got tacos for arms. You're going to ask him your question, and then I'll answer you by sending you an email.
I'm really disturbed. And if you want to write me, because I can't have salsa and I'm afraid of taco nightmares, you can reach out to us on social media, on Instagram and Facebook. We're Large Nerdron Collider. On Twitter, we're LNC_podcast. On Discord, we're also Large Nerdron Collider. Or you can email us at largenerdronpod@gmail.com. Oh, and if you want an invite to Discord, I post them on our website on each episode. And then if that has expired, because sometimes I'm behind on doing that, you can email us and I'll send you an invite.
Yes. And until next time, I am Jonathan. Make a run for the border, Strickland.
And I am Ariel, filling the time.
goes.
The Large Nerdron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.